You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 20 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, May 21st, 2008. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we're your hosts for a weekly conversation about technology and how it might play a part or role in your ministry. Sally, it was good to see you face-to-face last week.
Yeah, it was a nice treat to have the streaming video crew visit Martin Luther College. I got to look over your shoulder and enjoy the work that you did there, both being present at one of your web streaming events and then watching it online on Saturday. So good job to you guys. Kudos there, because it was very well received, I'm sure.
Right. And it was a neat experience, too. We were in the middle of our web streaming season, as it were. As Sally mentioned, we were up in New Ulm streaming the festivities at Martin Luther College. For those of you that aren't Wells and our listeners, that is our teacher and pastor training college. And the events that we streamed last week were the commencement concert, which was a first time for us, their graduation service, and then kind of the highlight, you know, for a lot of the students after 4 or 5 years of school is assignment day, where they get to find out where they are being assigned to their first call and where they will be living in the coming months. So a lot of anticipation around that service. It's always neat to see the faces and be able to stream that to people who could not be there. Go ahead, Sally.
No, I was just going to say that's true. For me, I know experiencing a call service last year, it was great for my family to be able to watch. So I'm sure there were a lot of long distance family and friends, as well as congregations and schools that were anticipating those assignments that were watching to see.
Yeah, we estimated at least over 1,000 viewers, online viewers of those events last weekend. So it's a little bit nerve-wracking for us, as I mentioned, it's our first time for doing a concert, and there's so many more variables when you do a concert. You've got, I don't know how many mics that were there. We had probably had 15, 20 mics we had to control, made sure we get the video or the cameras pointed at the right locations. Those of you that watched, hopefully it was seamless, but there were 3 cameras going, and the team that was there with me, Julie Duran and Alyssa Dunning, just did a super job at making all that work together. So, as I mentioned, we've got more streaming coming up, and that will be up at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary later this week. So we thought a great topic for the show today would be a conversation about video streaming.
That's right. Something that wasn't possible 1 or 2 years ago is now becoming very possible for congregations to take advantage of. Not just possible, but actually free. And so that's very, very exciting to be able to share that kind of information with our listeners.
So Sally and I are going to talk a little bit about that on the show today. And a little bit later, we're going to play an interview with Teacher Dale Witte of Winnebago Lutheran Academy. That's one of our area Lutheran high schools, about he's using technology to get his kids interested in music. Very interesting conversation we had with Dale. We will have the ever popular picks of the week and a whole lot of other good stuff. Mm-hmm. How's that for a technical term, Sally?
High tech here.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about video streaming. And first of all, when we talk about video streaming, what are we talking about, Sally? Exactly.
Well, we're talking about live coverage of events so that people can tune in at the exact moment that something's going on in your church or school and be a part of that, whether it's a worship experience or a school event or whatever. Video streaming via the internet allows them to basically tune in to your own kind of television station over the internet.
Yeah, that's probably a great analogy. See, it's essentially a screen, just accept, not on your TV, but on your computer screen, and it plays through your computer's sound system, and you have channels, and you have times when shows are on and when they're not on, and it's essentially the TV of the 21st century, some would probably call it. The numbers are really astounding of people. First of all, streaming live video. There's all kinds of things that you can see live, you know, these days. Some good, some bad, of course. I think it's only going to grow really quickly in the coming months and years as online video is becoming really popular. A lot of people are catching their news this way. There's probably the generation, you know, the 20s and 30s, 30-year-olds are probably watching more online video than they are TV at this point.
Right. And the other aspect of that is on-demand viewing, mm-hmm. not the live streaming, but the actual recorded video that's captured and archived on the internet. So, you know, when you talk about people watching online, people are going back and watching television episodes that they've missed because they couldn't tune in at the right time. They can watch them at their convenience in the middle of the night if they want, because they're archived on the internet and available at any time.
And that's a good question that our listeners should consider as they are thinking about streaming services or events in their church or school. And that's, do we do live or do we do on-demand? And there are some decisions that you should probably think about carefully. And I would think in general, most congregations would agree that on-demand certainly is a no-brainer. You want to allow your web visitor to see those events, those church services, to get a little bit of flavor, especially visitors or potential visitors, to see a Bible class or to see a worship service or a sermon that's preached, to get a little bit of a sense and flavor and comfort level with what goes on within the service. But there certainly would be things that you'd want to stream live that would have general interest either to members who can't be there, or relatives or friends or college students or military personnel who may want to, you know, feel like they're a part of the congregation and join a live event but just can't be there for whatever reason. So lots of different applications that you can think of for live or on-demand streaming. So let's talk a little bit about what kind of requirements there are, Sally, for streaming live events, technical requirements, that is.
Well, it's actually kind of lowered over the years. Things are fairly simple to get started with streaming. The websites that we're going to point to today, most of them allow you to embed your stream into your own website, so you can actually put it integrated with your church or school website and play right there on your own web page rather than sending them somewhere else. And typically they do that using Flash delivery. Flash is a video scheme that's available really embedded with the browsers that come out for the internet now. So with this Flash widget that's part of the software, you hook up your camera and your audio feed into a computer, and it recognizes that. It's kind of like a plug-and-play thing almost, mm-hmm. that the software just tunes in and knows, oh, you have a camera hooked up, and it starts to capture what's being fed through that camera and upload it to the internet so it can be streamed out to those that are viewing. So mm-hmm. actually pretty easy to get started with.
Okay, so there are just a few components that a video broadcaster, you know, per se would need, and that of course is a computer, and it doesn't need to be an overly beefy computer. It shouldn't be, you know, something that's 5 or 6 years old. It needs to have some decent processor power, because it does tax the processor. It needs to have a decent audio card. You need a way to get the video into your computer and then out. So if you're depending on what kind of camera setup you're using, and I wouldn't suggest using a webcam or those kinds of things, but a video camera, high quality video camera, can be attached via FireWire connection, or you can use there's some video converter, you know, cheap video converter devices that allow you to take a NS video stream, get it into your computer. If you want to go high end, you can go with remote controlled cameras that maybe you even already have installed in your sanctuary. If you're doing or interested in doing worship services, those kinds of things. So you need that computer. You obviously need camera. There's a number of things to think about when you're capturing video, and that's certainly your camera angles. Make sure those are appropriate. The worst thing that you can do is kind of try and tuck these cameras in such a location, if you're doing worship services, a way that, you know, they're way up in the rafters, or they're, you know, far up in the balcony where the camera angle is not natural. You know, you want to try and give your visitors an immersive experience, and to try and get the camera at an angle where, you know, it looks real. You know, so it's not a profile; it's a straight on view, and you've got some decent camera angles. Lighting is always a concern. One of the things that I see a lot of for congregations that are posting videos now is they just really struggle with lighting. Churches weren't made to do video, so you've got to think about that. But just a few strategically placed lights would help the video feed a lot. And then, Sally, audio is really important, isn't it?
Sure. Actually, you want to make sure that you're not just using the camera microphone to pick up the audio that's in the room. It's much better to actually have a direct feed of the audio from your sound system into the camera.
Really important.
Or even maybe purchasing a wireless mic that can be fed right into the computer, so that you're picking up really high-quality audio.
Yep.
Very important.
Yeah, especially for things like this. If they can't hear it, it can be the best video in the world. Mm-hmm. They're not going to watch. So
sure.
I would say if you're going to spend money, do it on the audio, catch up with the video, but that audio is really important.
And the final component would be then having a good connection to the internet.
Right.
That's primary importance. And I'm thinking that you'd want to have a wired connection, not be using something wireless, but actually go with a wired connection, high speed, having enough bandwidth to transmit a good quality video to the server that's then going to feed that to your viewing audience.
Mm-hmm. And the very last component is a way to stream that out to the internet. You mentioned that, Sally, with some of these tools, these flash-based tools that essentially recognize your audio and video. There are, in general, there's a bunch of these, but I've kind of narrowed it down to four free services that you may want to consider. And I'm not going to recommend one over the other because they all have their pluses and minuses. We'll just list them here, and you can try them out because they are free. It's an easy way to kick the tires without making a serious commitment to them. The first one is probably the most popular and the one that was probably on the scene before the others, and that's a service called Ustream. That's Ustream, Ustream.tv, Ustream.tv. And there are millions of users out there of Ustream. Pretty solid. We've ran into a few audio problems when we've tried to use it, but that may be specific to our system. We have a little higher-end, what's called a TriCaster system, which sends out video and audio, and it has a little bit of trouble sometimes with their audio. But you know, your mileage may vary. So try Ustream.com, you know, maybe as a starting point, and if you don't get the results you like, there are a couple others here. Kyte.com, that's KYTE.com. Very easy to use. Ustream is a little bit harder. Kyte is a little bit easier, I guess, if I were to put them on a scale. You can record there and make these videos available for immediate download later. Kyte and another one called Mogulus, Mogulus.com, are what I would call social video streaming services. So what I mean by that is they're meant that people can kind of join together around video feeds or video streams. So they typically have things like chat rooms that come along with that, where people can interact and talk about the video that's going on. Most of these you can turn them off, and in most cases for a church's application, you'd probably want to, where you want to keep it clean. You can, in all of these cases, you can embed the video on your own website, which is really neat. Some of times there's a little watermark that comes with the video, so you have to kind of live with that in some cases. In some of the other services, you can get rid of that. But you can really make it your own. And the final one is a product called StickCam, StickCam.com. And that's one of those that has a branded viewer. In almost all cases, you can customize the viewer, and the best part about all of them is that they're free. So give them a try. We'll put links to them in our show notes.
Yeah, we've had just a very limited amount of experience with it here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye. We've used Ustream.tv and broadcast our Easter services and our confirmation services this spring, and had very good results. Had I think the most viewers we had was 38 for our confirmation examination service. So we thought that was a pretty good start to doing live
Oh,
video.
sure.
We did embed it right there. We used the Synod Final Web product for our church website, and we were able to embed it on our final website without any problems. And we actually did it over a wireless connection, and I said earlier it'd be much better if we had a wired connection. So we're looking into getting wired internet connections in our church right now. So, but very easy to get started with, and we've had good results just for being beginners at it.
Right. So why not? Give it a try. We'd like to hear from you if you're doing anything like this. So please contact the show. Our email address is wellstech@wells.net. And we would love to hear your experiences, your advice, if you're using any of these services, or maybe you're using a service that we haven't even brought up here or are aware of. And we'd like to pass that on to our listeners as well. Up next, an interview with teacher Dale Witte of Winnebago Lutheran Academy, one of our area Lutheran high schools, about his work in the classroom and teaching music to kids who may not otherwise be interested in music at all, but because it's kind of cool and you get to use a computer. One of his classes is one of the most popular in the school. So let's listen to our conversation with teacher Dale Witte. We welcome to the show today Dale Witte, teacher at Winnebago Lutheran High School in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Welcome, Dale.
Good morning, Martin. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Dale, tell us a little bit about yourself, what your current position is and responsibilities there at WLA.
Well, most people would know me here as the choir director. I've been the choir director here since 1993. So the majority of my call and ministry and work is involved with teaching three choirs every day, a show choir twice a week in the evenings, taking my traveling choir around to the association congregations of WLA. In fact, we just had our last Sunday yesterday morning at St. Peter's here in Fond du Lac. So most people know me as that, and I stay pretty busy as that. In the last couple of years, I've taken on a new class, and that's why you're calling me, I'm guessing, and that's a music technology class here, and I've been teaching a music technology class to students at WLA who aren't in band or aren't in choir. That's really how it was first envisioned, and it's turned into a really desirable class by a lot of kids. So I am getting kids that are in band and are in choir who want to take it. Really, it's meant to take the place of a general music class or a music one credit.
Okay.
Everybody here at WLA is supposed to have a music credit before they graduate, and this fills that bill for a number of students.
Let's take a step back and maybe ask a philosophical question of sorts.
Sure.
So why is music education, why do you feel music education is important for students?
Oh, boy, we could talk for an hour. We could probably talk for more than an hour on this one. Music education I see as so important for students for so many different reasons. Really, the simplest one is because there are so many passages in the Bible that say sing. There are so many passages in the Bible that say make music to God. There are so many examples in the Bible of using music in worship. Singing the psalms, singing hymns, singing spiritual songs, playing instruments in worship. I think it's a no-brainer. We need to be teaching our kids how to do this, how to sing, how to use the voice in the instrument that God gave them.
Right.
He created us with music in our bodies and the ability to make music. Everybody has that ability. So we need to teach kids how to use that ability, whether it's in singing or playing or making music. That's probably the most important reason and the most basic reason. Mm-hmm. Now, if you ask other people, you'd probably hear them say, well, music education is important because it teaches the other half of the brain,
right?
The creative side, the artistic side of the brain. And I see a lot of that in the students that I have. I see very talented academic students come over into music, and they're some of the top students in school then. People could make the argument they're using both sides of their brain. Mm-hmm. They're seeing the using the brain that God gave them as God intended. But, you know, different people will give you different answers
right.
on that.
Well, I would assume that some of the students that you get in your class are asking the same question. You know, why do I have to do this? And then ultimately, that's the freshmen that are asking that. That's right. And ultimately, that's what you're trying to do by incorporating technology, is kind of make it, you know, make it real, make it fun, get them interested, get them excited about something maybe that they thought they had no interest in the first place.
Yeah, and honestly, on the high school level, sometimes I feel like I'm doing catch-up from the grade school level. Mm-hmm. And I know our grade school teachers are pressed for time. I firmly believe every kid loves music. I don't care what kind of music they love, but I have yet to come across a student that can't tell you a favorite artist, a favorite group, a favorite CD, a favorite album, a favorite song. When they go home after school, they turn on their iPod and they listen to this song, or they crank their radio and they listen to that song. Everybody loves music. Mm-hmm. Well, for those kids who haven't had a decent training in how to sing, for those kids who haven't had a decent training in how to play an instrument, here then at the high school level at WLA, I've developed this class in music technology to help them get their musical ideas out. And that became another impetus and really philosophical base for this class, that every kid loves music. I want to teach them how to make music, mm-hmm. not just sit back and go, oh, that's a quarter note, that's an eighth note, this is a meter. That should have been taught in grade school. I want to teach them how to use that to get their creative musical ideas out of their head.
So, Dale, I'm really curious about this technology tie. How exactly do you go about tying in technology to your music lessons?
Good question. I run a MIDI lab. I call it the MIDI lab because that stands for Musical Instrument Digital Interface, MIDI. It's one of those acronyms that you see a lot in music technology. But it's a Macintosh lab here in the music department. I've got 10 iMacs. Some of them are G5, some of them are Intels, and they're all running GarageBand, which is a program in Mac's iLife suite. It becomes the tool for creative expression in music. It's a recording tool. You can do audio recording into it. You can do MIDI recording into it. It becomes a sequencing tool. After you've recorded your MIDI, and I can go into some other projects in detail, it helps the kids clean them up. And, you know, face it, these aren't kids that have huge keyboard backgrounds, but still they can create music. They can use the loops that come along with the program to help provide, you know, they hear that drum beat and they want to find that drum beat, and so they find a loop that uses that drum beat. So the program GarageBand, which is part of the iLife suite that Mac puts, or that Apple puts out, is really the tool, the one program that I use a lot. Now, I do use Audacity with my kids, too. Audacity is a free audio recording program. And do you mind if I just start talking about projects?
Sure.
You know, that I've done with my kids?
Yeah, what are you doing with it in real life?
At the beginning of the school year, I have to admit I have a selfish reason for teaching the kids how to use Audacity. Because my interest in music technology came about when cheerleaders and the dance team would come to me every year and say, Mr. Whitty, can you cut this music for our dance routine? Or can you cut this music for our cheerleading routine? We need a minute's worth of music, and here's the four songs that we want to put together into that minute's worth of music. So for a number of years, I was doing this for the dance team and for the cheerleading team, and then the routines started to get huge, like homecoming routines, mm-hmm. like 10-minute long routines, you know, putting 30 songs together. So at the beginning of the music technology class, I got really selfish with that project, and I wanted to teach my kids how to cut music so that they could take over some of that work from me. Mm. And sure enough, it worked. In the last 2 years, I don't believe that I've done one song. I may be wrong. I have a famously bad memory. But I don't think that I've done one song for the dance team or the cheerleaders. Kids have taken that on themselves.
Neat.
So they're importing the music into Audacity. They're doing the cuts. They're doing the splits, the edits, the crossfades. They're lining up beats. They're putting the ideas together. They're working with each other. Basically, I've given them the tools to be able to get that done. So that's really, you know, one of the selfish projects, but it's paid off around here at WLA in the high school, you know, culture of how kids use music.
So do the kids work in teams then? It doesn't sound like you have enough computers for each child, so do you pair them up and do they have projects that they kind of work on together?
Well, that's actually how I started the class because, you know, computers are expensive and Macs mm-hmm. are even more expensive than PCs. I was able to buy 5 Macs. Actually, a long time ago, I used to teach music theory here at WLA, and I was teaching my kids how to write hymns, 4-part harmony. Mm-hmm. And their final project was write a hymn and then put it on Finale, a music notation program. I was having them do this on my own office computer. Mm-hmm. I had one Mac at that time, and I would have up to 6 kids working on that. So I knew that I needed to get more Macs. In the first year of the music tech class, I had 5 iMacs and 2 kids working on a machine at once. Well, you know what happens when 2 kids work together on a computer at once?
You can only imagine.
Yeah, one does the work and the other watches. And
that's right.
It's, you know, it got us through the first semester, but it was not an ideal situation. Mm-hmm. So the next year I mortgaged my budget and I got 5 more iMacs so that we'd have 10 machines in the room, and that's the size of the class now. So it's okay. 1-to-1 with computers.
Oh, it is. Great.
Every kid has their own machine. And I've got this year, or this semester, 1 section. In past years, I've had 2 sections, and according to my schedule, next year I'll have 2 sections as well. Mm-hmm. So I try really hard at getting 1 kid for 1 machine so everybody's on task all the time.
Is this something that can be taught or tried at the elementary school level, or is that a little bit too advanced for what our elementary schools could potentially do?
Well, GarageBand is such a deep program. It's really an amazing program because it's so simple. So my first reaction is, can this be done in an elementary school? Parts of what I'm doing here at WLA in the music technology class can be done easily because GarageBand is such a simple program. You really don't need to know much about it. Mm-hmm. You can drag loops around and create beats and add instruments to it. And if you've ever worked with a loop based music production tool like GarageBand, or Sony's got a product called Acid, and there's other loop-based music creation tools out there. You just drag loops together. You really need to know nothing about music. Mm-hmm. And if you know anything about me, I'm an Apple fanatic. I love Macs, and I think they're simple. They're just easy. They just work. So if you are wanting to get into music technology and scared about, do I have the knowledge to do this? GarageBand is a pretty easy program to get into, but it's a pretty deep program. I used to run Logic Pro, and Logic Pro is Apple's pro-level studio recording tool, and I determined that I didn't need to be running that for what I was using here, and I said, okay, I'm just going to use GarageBand. I'm going to force myself to do all my recording in GarageBand, do all my music backgrounds. In fact, I use GarageBand to make CD accompaniment tracks for my show choir and practice recordings for kids for solo ensemble. And I have yet to hit the wall with what GarageBand can do. Mm-hmm. So it's a really simple program, and yet it's a really deep, you know, complex program. Some really great sounds in there, too.
Do you find some of your students working on these kind of projects or maybe initiating their own projects at home with, you know, whether they have a PC or Mac? I assume there's tools out there that they can use at fairly low cost that can get them, you know, started at least on an entry level?
Yeah, I'm concerned about that because I do run a Mac lab here, and I know that a lot of kids don't have a Macintosh at home. They might have a PC, and they might have a really old PC at home. Mm-hmm. And what I teach them here, you know, from a teacher's point of view, I can't assume that they're going to be able to take their homework home and do their homework at home. That's actually one reason why I run Audacity, because it is cross-platform. It is for Windows. It is for Mac. It's for Linux. It's for a bunch of different platforms.
Right.
And at the beginning of the year, when the kids are just getting into the course, I want them to be able to take the stuff home, take the project home, download the program, work on it, feel like they've got some of that.
Oh, sure.
I have had kids that have, after the class, continued on either in Audacity, or they'll come back into the lab and they'll want to record something. Now they know how to do it, and now their ideas start flowing even more. Mm-hmm. And that's usually the case I found when I pick up a new piece of technology, is it takes a while to learn how to use it.
Right.
And then after you learn how to use it, then you start dreaming with, oh, I could use it for this, I could use it for that. And that's also the reason why I like to have this Macintosh lab here at school, because kids will ask to come in and they'll ask to do their own recordings and their own songs, and it's fun to see the growth and the I want to keep doing this.
Mm-hmm. So what's in store for the future, Dale? Do you have any vision of where WLA is going with their music technology, or just music technology in general?
Well, I am the music technology class. I am the music technology teacher. So do I have any vision of where it's going to go? It's a really popular class here. Part of the reason, I think, is everybody gets to work on a computer and make music. Mm-hmm. If I had to predict 2 years into the future, I'd be hard-pressed to say this is, I think, where music technology is going to go. I can say some general things. Computers have gotten more powerful. As a rule, every year the sounds get better and better. One of the reasons why I teach this class is also because we are seeing a shortage of piano players and organists in our synod. I'm trying to teach kids at WLA how to make music on a computer for their own home congregations, so that they can program the hymns for the church service, they can program the accompaniment CD for the choir to sing along with. And you know, there's products out there that do that. There's our Northwestern Publishing House has a software product called HymnSoft that does that, and it's got the whole hymnal built in. What I see as an advantage of using a program like GarageBand is the ability to pick your own sounds, to have more control, more freedom. I have the ability to teach kids about instrumental quartets and symphonic instruments and band instruments, and making more of an orchestration than maybe just, okay, I'm going to make an organ sound here, I'm going to make a piano sound. And then we've used those hymn projects in chapel here at WLA for our own students to sing along with and worship along with. I've had students in the past take CDs back to their own home congregations and have their choir directors use them as accompaniment CDs for their choirs when they had no accompanists. Unfortunately, we've got the shortage of musicians in the synod and keyboard musicians, and this can help. Mm-hmm. It requires teaching. It requires somebody with some knowledge and saying, okay, do this, don't do that. This has worked, that hasn't worked. But we're starting to see the successes here, just of how can we use technology to help worship in our synod and in our home congregations and even here at WLA. Mm-hmm. And those sounds just get better and better. The loops get better and better, the samples get better and better, and people listen to them and they go, wow, you made that? I know you. You're not that much a musician, and you made that? Wow. And the kids are really proud about doing that.
Wonderful. Thanks, Dale, for your time. We certainly would pray that the Lord would continue to bless your music ministry there, and hopefully, you know, some of our listeners will be able to get excited about this and maybe do some of these kinds of things themselves, both on the elementary school level and if they're in the high school or even college level. That sounds like this is a growing field that we really need to pay some attention to.
Thank you. Can I help anybody that wants to learn a little bit more about what I'm doing here?
That's up to you. If they'd like to contact you, you're in the yearbook, right?
I am in the yearbook. I do keep a class blog for my music technology class. It doesn't have a very memorable URL. So
we'll put it in our show notes as well. So
okay. But if they go to WLA's website, WLAVikings.org, go to the faculty pages, find my ugly picture, they'll find a link for my music technology blog and all of these MIDI projects. And it's a running list of what we've done for the year.
Oh,
I don't claim to know everybody. You know, I don't claim to know everything about what I'm doing, but I want to keep this track or this, you know, these records of what we've done. The kids are blogging, I'm blogging, we're posting all of our projects online so people can hear what we're doing. We've gotten hits from around the world. It's kind of fun to see where we get hits from. And if anybody's got questions, they can find me there and they can contact me at WLA.
Great. Thanks so much, Dale.
Thanks, Martin.
Okay. Sally, one of the things that I was thinking of, too, as Dale was talking, and he mentioned it, too, was the shortage of musicians that he's seeing in the church. But churches are, at the same time, looking to expand their musical offerings. They want to offer more than just the traditional organ. Some of them are offering contemporary services where they want to introduce other musical instruments, or even within the regular traditional worship service, they're trying to bring in instrumentalists, trumpets or flutes or those kinds of things. Yet at the same time, we've got this perceived shortage of musicians. Boy, if our schools can begin to encourage our kids to get involved with music in this way, that can only be a positive thing.
I'm very confident of that as well. We actually were in a congregation in Texas that used a computer-generated music program for a period of time because we didn't have an organist. And it certainly was a blessing to us and allowed us to worship with music very seamlessly. So it is definitely a tool that we can make use of. I went out and checked out Mr. Witte's blog for his music technology class, and there's actually some hymns that our listeners could go out and listen to, download, and hear some of the music that the kids are creating. So if you're interested or curious about the quality of the music or whatever, I really encourage you to go out and listen, and you will be quite impressed. The kids are posting their hymns that they're doing for their chapel services there at Winnebago Lutheran Academy, and then commenting on each other's hymns and things like that. So it's a really neat use of technology just right there in his blog, how they're able to communicate and share their music that way.
So again, our thanks to Dale Witte for joining us and sharing what he's doing there at WLA in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Picks of the week, our next, Sally, what do you have for us?
Well, I'm going to get real basic today and talk about just a little tip that I have, and that is keyboard shortcuts. I'm not sure if many of our listeners make use of keyboard shortcuts, but there are shortcuts for both the Windows-based keyboards as well as Mac keyboards that will allow you to very quickly and easily perform tasks on your computer without having to reach for the mouse every time. Some of my favorites on the Windows keyboard are using the Control key, and I just live by Control Copy and Control Paste. Control C or Control V for paste are just really valuable tools to me that I use all the time in my daily work. Another one that's real useful is Control A to select all, so that you don't have to take your mouse and actually physically drag across an entire area of the screen to select the entire document for copying or whatever. So Control A is one that I make use of quite a bit. And I just learned a new one just last week, and boy, that was a surprise to me. I thought I knew it all. Keyboards. Yeah. But I learned about Control plus space on the Windows keyboard. If you have an area of text highlighted, Control space will strip the formatting or clean up the formatting. And this can be really useful. Let's say you've copied something from a website or something and it has all different fonts and colors and things like that, and you just want it to be plain text. If you highlight that information and do a control space, it cleans it up really nicely, strips it down to just plain text. And that can be just super valuable when you're trying to hurry and copy and paste stuff. Mm-hmm. So I encourage you to check out keyboard shortcuts. I'll include a link in the show notes to both Windows and Mac-based shortcuts that you could print, you know, as a reference or whatever until you get used to using them. But I think you'll find it will make you more efficient and faster, and also not be so stressful on your body to constantly be having to reach for the mouse, you know, a little bit more ergonomically comfortable for you in your work with the computer and the keyboard.
Sally, one keyboard a series of keyboard combinations that I've learned at least recently, the last year or two, is many keyboards that come with Windows machines now have a Windows key. And one of the obvious uses for it is to open up the Start menu. You click on the Windows key, and up pops the Start menu. But there are a couple keyboard shortcuts related to using that Windows key as well. One of them is Windows key M, which will minimize all open windows. So you've got 10 open windows on your desktop, and you want to minimize them very quickly. Windows key M does that. Windows key D shows your desktop. There's a button usually in the tray that allow you to do that, but this is a quick way to just see what's on your desktop. It clears everything off your screen. You'd hit it again, and then everything pops back. And then a really cool one is the Windows key E, which opens up Windows Explorer. So if you want to get into your file system quickly, Windows key E pops that window up. There's a number of other Windows keyboard shortcuts, and those are available online as well. Just do a Google search for Windows key shortcuts, and you should be able to find those as well. Thanks, Sally. Great advice. Mm-hmm. Hopefully a time saver for everybody. My pick of the week is a hardware pick, and it's the Belkin Wi-Fi phone. This is an emerging class of devices that you're going to see more and more of. These are essentially devices that are mini computers. They connect to Wi-Fi networks. And in this case, since it's a phone, it uses a service called Skype, which is the technology that Sally and I use to communicate over the Internet. It's free if you're calling from Skype user to Skype user. But the Belkin Wi-Fi phone is just a handheld unit. It looks like a cell phone that you can put in your home or any place that there's a Wi-Fi network, that you have a Wi-Fi network set up. It connects to the network, and it essentially allows you to use Skype just like you would use a regular headset. The voice quality is really good. The reception is good. I can go anywhere in my home, for instance. And this is the kind of device for those people looking to get rid of their landlines. And I know there's a lot of people out there doing that, but don't necessarily want to use their cell phone because that costs money as well. Here's a device that you can use in your home or wherever there's a Wi-Fi connection. Really use it in Starbucks or wherever you've got wherever you've got a Wi-Fi connection. So no computer needed. You simply hook this thing up. You get a Skype account, and away you go. You can receive calls. You can make calls. It all depends on what kind of Skype services you use. And let me talk a little bit about those so you get the total flavor for this. There are three services that essentially you will need if you want this to be your landline replacement. You need a Skype-in number, which is basically a regular phone number, which you can pick with your area code probably, that allows people who don't have Skype to call you. So this would become your new, let's say, home phone number. There is a cost to get a Skype-in number. If you don't have a Skype subscription, and I'm going to talk more about that in a minute, it's $60 a year for a Skype-in number. If you have a subscription, it's half of that. So $30 a year, you get to maintain this number year after year after year. You probably will also want a Skype-out subscription, which basically allows you to call out to non-Skype users. So you can call a landline or you can call another cell phone with this. And there are two ways to get a Skype-out account. You can pay as you go, so you basically buy credits. And essentially it works out to about 2.5 cents a minute, which is really good compared to cell phone calls or certainly to maybe your landline charges. So 2.5 cents a minute, and those are U.S. calls. It's a little bit higher for international calls. Or you can have a monthly subscription of $2.95 a month, and that would be unlimited calls. I think it's a little bit higher for Mexico, I think $5.95 if you want to make those kind of calls, or international calls is even a little bit higher, but certainly well under what you would get charged in other, for other kinds of services. And then the final component is voicemail, and that's free if you have any kind of Skype out subscription or $20 a year if you use the pay-as-you-go approach. So very low-cost approach. Again, you're not sacrificing, at least as far as I can tell, any quality. The phone itself, the Belkin phone, and there are others available as well, but the Belkin one is the one that I'm using, I think retails for about $130. So you got to make an initial investment there. And again, I think, Sal, you're going to start seeing a bunch of these on the market as Wi-Fi becomes more ubiquitous across all of our homes and our workplaces. That this is just a natural alternative.
So did you actually take the plunge and get rid of your landline?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Wow.
About a year and a half ago we did that. I didn't have the Skype phone. I was just using Skype on the computer, which was kind of a bummer because I had to have my computer on all the time, and I was kind of chained to the computer if I wanted to make or receive
there.
A call. Yeah, exactly. But this with the Skype phone, with this Belkin phone, you know, I'm totally mobile. So it's that's the best of both worlds as far as I'm concerned.
So I'm just doing some quick calculations, and I'm thinking that probably around $70 a year for the total package subscription-wise, and you've got your own phone number. You pick the area code you want it in. So if you want to talk to your family most often and want to give them a local area code to call you at, then you can pick that instead of the area code that you actually live in or whatever.
Yep, you can pick any number you want, right?
Sure. And then you get voicemail, you get Skype out. I've been using it for about a year for my work phone since I physically am not in Milwaukee. I have still a Milwaukee area code and phone number so that the people that I work with at the Senate Administration Building can get in touch with me without having to dial long distance. Mm-hmm. And I've had just wonderful results with it. Honestly, I can't think of a bad call or poor call quality at any time. Right. So, I think I might be ready to make the plunge to the wireless phone. I'm still tethered right now.
Yeah, that's right. So, all right, up next, our Wells.net feature of the week. Sally, you're going to talk about Worship Helps?
That's right. Worship Helps is something that's part of the whataboutjesus.com website. You can get to it at wells.net/jump/worship-helps. And what this is it revolves around the standard readings that are done in our churches each week. So we typically have three readings coming up for each Sunday service. And so these readings are printed in the Worship Helps, and then they are kind of expanded upon because you can actually do the readings in preparation for the service and then answer a few study questions about each of the readings. So a great way to prepare for service. There's actually answers given to the questions, so you aren't just left hanging in case you are unsure about some of them. You can read the answers as well. We've used it in our family as just a family devotional tool, and it's just wonderful with the kids to go through those readings in advance of the service, and then you can just see their ears perk up when the readings come up and we've talked about them and prepared our hearts for, you know, the word that was going to be shared in church that Sunday. So I encourage you to check it out. Again, it's at wells.net/jump/worship-helps. And there's actually a way there on the screen that you can subscribe to receive them automatically each week via email.
Thanks, Sally. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to remind our listeners about the upcoming streaming services. We mentioned it at the top of the show. Just a reminder again, if you'd like to tune in to the commencement concert at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, the graduation, or the call assignments, go to streams.wells.net and click on the Live tab. Last night we did the vicar assignments, and we have three more services to be streamed, the commencement concert and graduation and the call assignment. So there's a whole schedule there, so you can see exactly what days and times are going to be Thursday and Friday of this week. You can see the times there at Central Time, of course. So check that out and experience what we've been talking about here with the concept of video streaming. Community feedback this week, Sally? Anybody talking to us?
Actually, yes, we heard from one of our long-distance listeners, Adam Valesky up in Juneau, Alaska, sent us a message encouraging us to talk a little bit about a Web 2.0 tool called the Wiki. Mm-hmm. Wiki is a Hawaiian term. It means quick, and I guess wikis have kind of revolutionized the internet and allowed people to quickly collaborate on projects. Adam sent us links to a couple of wiki tools that he recommends. One's called MediaWiki, which is something that you can actually download and install on your own web server if you have that kind of capabilities. It's actually the tool that runs Wikipedia, the internet encyclopedia that's really emerging as a great resource for everyone to do their research and things. So if you want to have the same exact software as Wikipedia runs on, you can download it for free from the internet and install it on your web server and set up your own wiki. There's also hosted wikis where you can sign up for an account and have a free wiki online. And one that Adam recommended was PBWiki. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that stands for peanut butter, PBWiki. Thinking that it's really smooth and easy to use, they went with that that title for their wiki product. And there's lots of ways that wikis can be used, thinking about congregation and schoolwork. You know, if you have any committees or boards or anything that meet, this is a way for them to share information online in between their meeting time and collaborate on different documents or materials that they're putting together for the congregation or school. So if that's a need of yours, then you might want to check out some of these wiki products, and we'll include a link to them in the show notes.
And I think, Adam from Alaska, thanks for sharing. I think we will put that on our show topics list and devote a show to talking about wikis, what they are, how to use them, the potential uses of them in a congregational or a school setting, and some of the technologies behind them. So thanks for the suggestion. If you have a suggestion or would just like to share your comments with us about any topic that we've talked about on the show or in the past, please do so. We would love to hear from you. Sally, we've got to get somebody to send us a voicemail. Maybe we need a drive or a campaign of some sort and offer some kind of prize for the first person who's going to send us a voicemail. We do have a voicemail line, and now that I mention it, I've got to find what that number is. 414-375-2334. We talked about Skype voicemail in my picks of the week. That's exactly what it is. That's our Skype in number, which is attached to a voicemail system through Skype. So if you want to try it out and see what that sounds like, give us a voicemail. If you have something that we feel is great to share with the audience, we'll play it online. So please send us a voicemail.
It would be great to have some more voices in our mix.
That's right. All right. Well, that will about do it for our show this week. As we normally do, we will conclude the show with a Wells featured musician. This week, we will treat you to the beautiful voice of Kevin Lersch, his song, Mary, Did You Know, on the album, Oh Holy Night. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Mary, did you that your baby boy would someday walk on water? Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make this child that you delivered will soon deliver you? Mary, did you know that your baby boy would give sight to a blind man? Mary, did you know that your baby boy will calm a storm with his hand? Did you know that your baby boy has walked where angels trod? When you kissed your little baby, then you kissed the face of God. that your baby boy will one day rule the nations. Did you know that your baby boy was heaven's perfect lamb? This sleeping child you're holding is the great